On Tech News Today, Google's working on another messaging app to compete against WhatsApp. Don't worry, Hangouts is probably safe from getting the Google Reader treatment. Plus, YouTube superstar PewDiePie is so big, he's outgrown Disney. Apple is negotiating cheaper prices for streaming music, and Facebook is getting into the healthcare business, sort of. It's all coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, October 3rd, 2014. This episode is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. And by Citrix GoToAssist, the number one global market leader in remote support. Sign up for GoToAssist before October 10th to get another Citrix product free for 6 months. Visit GoToAssist.com and get started. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with a journalist who reported. Welcome to the show. I'm Mike Elgin. And good morning to you, Jason Howell. How the heck are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty darn good. It's National Smile Day, somebody in the chat room said. I think, yeah, there
apparently.
You go. I don't know if it's true or not, but it's always nice to see your smiling face. We could be getting punked, but
that's okay. My smiling face is true.
Yeah. And we also have Christina Warren. Welcome to you, Christina Warren.
Hello.
Now it looks like you're bathed in light, like the Johnny Ive videos. It's like really, it's really awesome.
You know, it's interesting how the aluminium of the light now.
Yes.
That was my attempt at a bad Johnny Ive.
Carefully craft every detail again. So anyway, so you wrote an interesting piece about Windows 10, and you said it's getting every version of it is getting more like OS 10, and you said that's a good thing. So can you tell us about that point of view? How is Windows 10 becoming like OS 10?
Well, and it's interesting because I think that both OS 10 and Windows 10 are actually becoming more like each other. Windows 8 being an aberration, but if you look at the desktop space as it kind of evolved, both of them are becoming really similar. And to that point, you know, you take kind of the Aero glassiness of Vista and Windows 7 is now part of OS 10 Yosemite. Task View, which is a new feature in Windows 10, is basically Exposé, which is now known as Mission Control, which has been part of the Mac for more than a decade. Even some of the way that they're doing the search stuff, which I know they introduced in Windows 8, but they didn't really have it on the desktop side as much, is very similar to Spotlight. So there are a lot of...
Little Skype issue there. Well, we're going to try to get her back, and I'm just going to launch into the news and hope she joins me back in just a second to interact with me on this news piece. Well, it's starting right now. Google is working on a new messaging app to compete with WhatsApp. In an exclusive India's Economic Times newspaper reported today that Google will soon start testing the app in emerging markets like India. The app will be free and probably be launched next year and would not require Google login credentials, which is kind of unusual for Google, and it differentiates it from the Hangouts app. If you recall, Google's rumored to have offered $10 billion to buy WhatsApp, but was outbid by Facebook, who picked it up for a cool $19 billion. And it sounds like we don't have Christina Warren with us back yet. We're going to try to get her back.
But I see her scribbling right now.
She's scribbling. Okay, good.
But I mean, I'll go ahead and ask the obvious question, which is, does Google need another messaging solution? I feel like they've gone from all of these disparate things like Talk and messaging, if you're on Android, the straight-up messaging app, and then Hangouts and all these different things. And they've gone through Google Voice. They've gone through the process of collecting them into one giant receptacle that is now kind of Hangouts, more or less. And then they're going to kind of open it up again. Why not combine? Why different?
Well, I have two theories. One of them is that they're taking on the Facebook model, which is Facebook looks around at who's not using their stuff and says, whatever it is they're using, we'll have one of those. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of people hesitate to do a Google login. A Google login is a pretty intense action, because once you're logged into Google, then now the whole privacy policy covers you. You're now logged in for all these different things. Maybe you want a different login for YouTube than you have for your chat messaging app. And so this enables them to do that. The second theory that I have is that they are doing this as part of their Android One program. This is something for the emerging markets, not for the people who would use Hangouts. And so this might be a very light app. It may integrate more seamlessly with SMS. It may have other features and benefits that somehow are sort of custom tailored to the emerging markets like India and elsewhere around the world. So that's what this appears to be. It appears to be a secondary type of messaging app for different types of users. Meanwhile, the people with the hardcore, this is great news, I think, for those of us who use Hangouts and other apps, because it frees them to really make Hangouts super powerful and to take advantage of the expensive electronics that people in Japan, the United States, Europe, and elsewhere might want to use. If they have to have one app for the whole world, they have to dumb it down sort of technically, I guess, and that is not a good thing for anybody. So it sounds like it might be a good thing. And again, this is something that we'll be hearing a lot more about if these reports are true. And of course, the Economic Times is a massive newspaper in India.
Now, obviously, taking a look right here, this is a leak of supposedly the next Nexus device, the Nexus 6 Motorola device. And one thing that you notice down at the bottom there,
dun, dun,
is this new messaging icon. Is there any possibility that we could see this on an upcoming version, or is it just too soon?
Very interesting. I've never seen that icon before, but it's clearly
mystery. I haven't either. Yeah. And we do have Christina back. It's good to have you back.
Great.
Good to be back.
So do you have any, you probably have something to say about messaging apps, but probably Skype, not this one.
A couple of four-letter words there. I think your analysis that I heard, Mike, I think is dead on. I do actually think we probably, if the leak seems to be timed to when we're expecting to see the next Nexus device and when L is supposed to be released, also some of the Android One stuff, you know, these leaks, a lot of people don't realize this, but they don't happen in a vacuum. You know, they're usually timed around something to get to build excitement. So, you know, that icon, I think, is probably a pretty good indicator that could be this new platform. I mean, and certainly this is an area where Google had a really big head start on messaging, but they've never really captured it the same way. You know, they were behind MSN, they were behind Yahoo on IM, and they had this great potential with Hangouts that I don't think they've ever leveraged correctly. But I think that with a standalone, and especially with a mobile-first offering, I think that's a really big point, too. Having something that's decoupled away from the standard web Google login and is just a pure, you know, messaging mobile app could be great for them, because that's, I think, one of the reasons why WhatsApp has been so successful and has grown so virally in those markets, especially emerging markets, is that it is this mobile first, mobile only sort of thing that is in no way tied to your identity on another web portal.
Very interesting. And this is another element where Google is differentiating itself from Facebook, which not only requires a Facebook account for you to use their messaging app, but also requires a real name to use Facebook. And so Google has abandoned their real names policy for Google Plus, and now it looks like they're offering a messaging app that doesn't require a login. So that's a great differentiator, I think. I mean, if you're going to differentiate from Facebook, that's a good one, and I think it might prove to be a popular one. It also has to be said that nothing gets past the eagle eyes of Jason Howell. You notice that icon. Good
well,
catch,
hey,
Jason.
I'm just excited about everything. So, you know.
Anyway, in just a sec, we're going to tell you about one of the biggest stars in the world, and you probably never even heard his real name. But first, we're going to tell you about Gazelle. Gazelle wants to buy your iPhone, your old one, not your new one. I mean, they'll buy your new one, probably. But they especially want to buy your old one. It's sitting around. You know it is. It's in a drawer somewhere, isn't it? You know it's there. Gathering dust, the battery is dying a slow death, and its value is declining with every passing day. And that's why you want to go to gazelle.com. That's GAZELLE.com. Find your item. Just say, you know, this is the phone that I have. Indicate its condition. Even if it's in a horrible condition, just indicate that. They will show you a price that is based on that exact model, that exact type of phone with that condition. And that price is going to come back at you and fund your next device. And that is a wonderful thing. It's a circle of life. It's the gadget circle of life. They'll pay you fast by check, PayPal, or if you use the Amazon gift card option, which is the one I always use, you get 5% extra, which is free money. And again, they send you a box. You throw the phone in the box, put the sticker on, and off it goes, and then you get paid. So find out what your iPhone is worth. Take a minute and go to gazelle.com to find out. The world's biggest YouTube star, Felix Schellberg, has about 30 million subscribers and makes about $4 million a year in advertising, and he personally keeps most of that money. He's in his early 20s. He's best known as PewDiePie, and he signed on with online content producer Maker Studios less than 2 years ago. But an exclusive interview by Maria Lindholm in the Swedish magazine Icon revealed that he's thinking of leaving Maker. Maria Lindholm joins us now from Sweden by phone. Welcome to you, Maria Lindholm.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, before we get into the details, can you tell us who Felix Schellberg is and what he does on YouTube? And more importantly, why?
Yes, sure. Felix is 24 years old, and he has a YouTube channel, a Let's Play channel. He films himself while he plays the different games, different apps and different video games, and he comments and he does sort of humor skits about this. And he puts two of these every day on his YouTube channel, and he has now 31 million subscribers, and he is by far the biggest YouTuber in the world. He's bigger than anyone else.
Now, he's thinking about leaving Maker Studios, and why would he do that? Or maybe a better question is, why would he ever sign up with Maker Studios in the first place? Maker is a production company, and he doesn't use any production. It's just him with his webcam. And so what does he get out of Maker Studios, or what did he think he would get when he signed on?
True. This is the thing with, if you do Let's Play videos, if you do gaming of any sort on YouTube, you cannot get any, you don't get the advertising pay from YouTube because of the aspects of it, of copyright issues and everything. You have to be part of a network to get your ad revenue. You have to get ad money. So that's why he has to be signed on with a network. And from the beginning, he was signed with Machinima. And then it turned out that he grew to be the biggest YouTuber in the world while signed to Machinima. And Machinima didn't know that he was signed to them until he wanted to leave. And it was a mess. And then he turned to Makers instead, and he was signed there. And he just said, we spent 2 days with him in Brighton in UK where he lives, and he just told us this. He needs to have a network just to get the ad revenue, but he doesn't need them to do his production or do his content in any way. So that's why he's now thinking of leaving and starting his own network with his friends instead.
Now, one of the things, you know, that the Maker's been really good at, and this was one of the reasons Disney bought them, not just for all of their great, you know, partners, you know, like PewDiePie, but because they've actually been really good at getting these sponsorships. And their background, I think, you know, goes back to Hollywood. They've been, you know, basically agents for a long time. Did you get the sense from him that he's ready to get into the business side of monetizing his network? I mean, he does so well with the production side, but did you get the sense that he's ready to really take on what it would take to build out his own network, both finding YouTubers and then also doing, you know, the sponsorship, the business side, the P&L side of what's involved with, you know, making that $4 million a year?
Sure. He's actually not that interested in making a lot of money, or more money that he's already making a lot of money. But I think he mostly said that he wanted to start his own network so he can help other YouTubers. He was not interested in other big sponsorships or anything. I mean, you can say that $4 million sounds like a lot of money to make in 1 year to do YouTube videos. But if you think about it, with his audience of 31 million people that subscribe to everything he does, he could make, I mean, if it were a traditional TV show or a radio show or anything, he could make, I mean, the money is quite little in comparison with the audience. I get the impression he's not into it because of the money. He's into it because he loves gaming.
Now, does his departure from Maker Studios, if in fact he does do that, now currently he's just saying he could do that, but if he did that, would this bring into question Disney's $950 million purchase of Maker Studios? I mean, they went in big with this thing, and of course, PewDiePie is the number one talent in that organization. Does this indicate that Disney made a mistake?
I think it shows that this new business is kind of fragile in a way, because they are so dependent on these talents. And a person like Felix, who is doing all his content by himself, and he has no crew, he doesn't even have an assistant. The only person he works with is his girlfriend, who he lives with, who sometimes films him while he does different things. So I think it shows that this new business of YouTubers and the social media stars, it's fragile. I mean, like this And now when Disney bought this for nearly $1 billion, if Felix leaves them, and he could do that with very easily, I think I would say it shows that it's a bit problematic if you leave it at that.
Now, of course, PewDiePie to me personifies the new world that we live in. And what I mean by that is, once upon a time when we didn't have the internet, before we had cable TV and all that kind of stuff, families all had kind of the same culture, if you know what I mean. I mean, you know, younger kids who are 10 or 11, 12, 13 or whatever would watch TV, the same TV their parents would watch. And there wasn't a lot of options and so on. But nowadays, here's a guy who is a superstar, super famous among young people. And their parents have never even heard of him and have no idea what it is they're watching. In your opinion, do you think that he personally is a good influence on kids? Is this a good thing that kids are watching his videos? I've never really watched much of him because I'm older than 15. But what's your opinion on that?
I think it's an issue. I think that's a larger issue of actually of parentship. I mean, how you as a parent, if you, how much you get involved with your children in what they do in front of the computer, actually. And I don't think it's up to a person like Felix at all to be. He can do whatever he wants, and he actually told me that he thinks that people should be at least 12 or 13 to watch his videos, because many games that he plays has an age limit of 18. And he curses a lot, and he makes quite crude jokes. But I think if you talk about children, the responsibility of children watching all these YouTube channels, I think it's actually up to the parents to know what the children do in front of the computer.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was a fantastic interview. I enjoyed reading it. And Maria Lindholm, I want to thank you for coming on Tech News Today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. You can find Maria's writing at iconmagazine.se, and you can follow her on Twitter at Maria A. Lindholm. Peter Kafka reported on Recode that Apple is negotiating with a major music labels about a new deals for Beats Music. Peter joins us now. Welcome to you, Peter Kafka.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Now, what is Apple negotiating for exactly?
Well, I think they want a bunch of things, but it seems like the most important and interesting thing is they would like the price that they pay the music labels to be lower, so they can eventually sell subscriptions to music streaming services for less than $10 a month, which is the standard right now.
Now, why other kinds of new, what other kinds of new rights does Apple want from the labels as well, in addition to just lower prices?
I don't know.
Okay, so
they report pricing,
but apparently they're looking for that sort of thing. Now, you mentioned that Apple is planning to revamp Beats. When do you think this would happen?
They're aiming for next year. I've heard February. I've heard spring. They don't have the rights. They don't have the deals yet, so it can't happen. I think there's probably some engineering that's going to happen as well, but they're looking for next year.
Now, given that the labels have historically had kind of a love-hate relationship with Apple, especially during kind of the iTunes era, do you think that the fact that the labels have, you know, been very public about being unhappy with some of those terms that they set, you know, a decade ago, do you think that they'll be willing to negotiate with Apple on their terms this time, especially since, you know, basically at this point, all the streaming...
You know, that was 2003, is a long time ago. The music labels at the time were worried that they'd given Apple too much power with their deals. They were worried they'd sort of accelerated the unbundling of music, but that's all over now. They'd like a lot of competition. They have competition. They have Google. They have Spotify. They have other services. They like to get more money for their product. So I think they might be amenable to this, especially if Apple can convince them that lowering the subscription rates won't decrease any more sales and might increase sales. What's also very likely to happen, I think almost a given, is that if Apple's prices go down, then everyone's prices go down. So Spotify, everybody else would end up selling his music for less or having the ability to sell it for less. So the labels have to sort of look around and go, all right, are we gonna reduce the amount we're going to make per subscriber in the hope of getting more subscribers? That's going to be Apple's pitch, and that's everyone else's pitch as well.
So if what do you think happens then to Spotify and RDO and others if Apple is able to lower the prices? I mean, are they going to be able to survive taking the cut? I mean, they're already running at negative losses anyway.
Their prices would go down as well. There's not going to be, I can't imagine a deal where Apple is paying less than RDO or Spotify.
Does that suggest that Apple may be flirting with the Amazon model of just doing a scorched earth on pricing and going so low, subsidized by their other businesses, that nobody else can compete in that space?
No, again, they're asking the labels to lower their prices. They're not talking about lowering the prices unilaterally.
I see.
Right? So they want the labels to lower their wholesale prices so their retail prices can be lower. I'm not sure that they could just go ahead and unilaterally just lower their retail prices on their own if they wanted to make this stuff free. I think the labels would have an issue with that. But that's not what they're proposing. They want to pay less for the music so they can charge less for it.
Now, TechCrunch reported that Apple's planning to shut Beats down. What are your sources telling you about that?
Yeah, no, that's not true. And Apple took the rare stop of actually saying that out loud. If you look, TechCrunch kind of screwed itself over because their headline said Apple is going to shut Beats down. The rest of the story wasn't nearly as inaccurate. It said, you know, they're talking about revamping it and rebuilding it, which is true. They may actually get rid of the Beats name at some point. They may fold it into iTunes. And as I reported, they're looking to relaunch the subscription service next spring. They have to get some work done before that happens. It's different than shutting it down, but they may overhaul it.
Yeah, I was going to ask. My sources have told me, you know, indicated that they're looking very seriously at just the rebrand, you know, maybe making iTunes Radio something bigger than what it's doing. And I guess that's what you're hearing, too, that obviously it's not a shutdown. It's just, you know, it's a rebrand. And I've also been hearing, you know, about potential integration, deeper integration with iTunes. Have you heard anything on that line, too?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be surprised if whatever product ends up coming out of this is called iTunes and not Beats Music. Beats Music doesn't have any traction, so if they're giving up an important brand name. The Beats headphones names are going to stick around. But look, when they bought Beats Music, it wasn't a barn burner. It wasn't selling millions of subscriptions. It was selling a couple hundred thousand max. So I think they're okay dumping that name. I think what they think they have is interesting talent with Jimmy Iovine and Ian Rogers and folks like that who helped build the service initially.
Peter Kafka writes exclusives at recode.net, and you can follow him on Twitter at pkafka. Thank you so much for joining us, Peter.
Thanks,
Kafka.
Guys.
All right. Reuters is reporting that Facebook wants to jump on the healthcare bandwagon. Plans are still in development, according to anonymous sources, but the current thinking is that the creation of online support communities is a good idea, and that would connect people who share the same affliction. They also might develop preventative care apps for improving health. Facebook has been holding meetings with people in the medical industry to explore what's possible, kind of like Apple had been doing for quite some time. Christina Warren, what do you think about this? Do we want Facebook to know our medical information as well?
You know, I don't know if we want them to know it, but I actually think that unlike a lot of their initiatives, this is one that makes a lot of sense and that could have a lot of potentially real world use beyond what you might think. I mean, I think that I could get over the creepy factor, for instance, of Facebook knowing my medical data than I could when Google was trying and failed with their health initiative. If only because, as you said, everybody's connected through Facebook. It's a way for support communities, or you know, they're also talking about things possibly with organ donor statuses and things like that, where it might actually... If you're working with the medical systems and if you're following the proper procedures, it might be a great way of being able to connect people together that are nearby that otherwise wouldn't be able to. The system wouldn't have any way of knowing that this person has this blood type and is able to pretend it is willing to be a donor and could, you know, donate stem cells or blood, or, you know, if heaven forbid there's an accident, could be an organ donor, you know.
Yeah, and they were successful with their organ donor status initiative in 2012, and that probably opened their eyes to the possibilities there. Now, Zuckerberg's wife is named Priscilla Chan, and she's a pediatric resident at the University of California at San Francisco. I didn't know that she was. I guess she's working on becoming a pediatrician, and she's very much into healthcare. She donated $5 million to the Ravenswood Health Center in East Palo Alto, and so it sounds like as a power couple. They are, they're the next Bill and Melinda Gates, I guess. They're going to use some of that Facebook money to make the world a better place, in part through better health. And so kind of an interesting development there. And I guess it's inevitable. There seems to be a glut, though, in interest in healthcare. It seems like all the smartwatch makers are into it. Apple, Google, everybody else is really into healthcare. Everybody wants to read your pulse and check your heart rate. Yep. And all that kind of stuff. And so at some point, it's just going to become such a spectacular banality, anything related to healthcare, that it's going to be hard to differentiate. But of course, everybody's on Facebook, so maybe that is a good place for this sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really their big draw is that everybody is on Facebook, and that's one of the things that they have. And I think that's actually one of the few advantages they have, and they don't exploit as well as they should when they launch these kind of new services. Is so oftentimes they're afraid, I think, of using the network effect of Facebook to their advantage. But in a case like health, where literally, you know, my entire family, most of my extended family, people that I've never met or have met once or twice, are on Facebook, you know, and that opens up, I think, some possibilities, especially with health, that you don't necessarily get from fitness apps and from even, you know, volunteering people to log in certain ways. I mean, this is creepy to me to think about, but at the same time, it would make sense. There are a lot of initiatives that are trying to digitize medical records and are trying to do things to try to make the health system less antiquated than it is. And what I've suggested that some of the companies do, and they've given it serious thought, is the fact that, you know, it's hard to get patients to sign up for these programs. It's hard to get them to sign up with their insurance company or with their hospital. But if you were able to use a Facebook login, maybe not have the information tied to Facebook, but just have that as your identifier, wouldn't that speed up the process a whole lot more? And wouldn't that be a way that a lot more people would be now initiated into these systems, that the one of the biggest challenges is actually getting people onboarded into them?
Yeah, and it has to be said that Facebook is an advertiser-supported company. And in all of this, somehow, I have to believe that they want to sell advertising for pharmaceuticals and other medical and healthcare-related products, because it's incredibly lucrative. If you look at, you know, mainstream television, the big ads are a lot of pharmaceutical ads.
And absolutely.
So there's a lot of money to be made there. Evernote yesterday announced two new products or features, I guess. The first is Evernote Context, which is an artificial intelligence engine that watches what you type and then suggests outside content you might want to integrate into your document. The other is called WorkChat, which features collaboration and presentation tools. It's designed to replace email. In fact, Evernote CEO Phil Libin said that WorkChat is designed to, quote, break the tyranny of the inbox, that long list of messages you're never going to get through, unquote. WorkChat works a little bit like Google Docs, or maybe like the now defunct Google Wave, with real-time updates that can be seen by everybody collaborating. Both Context and WorkChat may become available as early as next month. Christina Warren, I hate the idea of Context, because it's going to give everybody the same limited set of sources for everything, and those are going to have a completely, you know, assuming that enough people use it, they're going to have a lot more impact on what everybody's thinking, because they're going to be drawing them from this limited set of Evernote partners.
Yeah, I'm kind of mixed feelings on it. On the one hand, I think it could be useful, especially for sourcing, but I wish that it, I guess, could be less of a search engine play, because that is kind of, you don't want to get into this bubble where everybody is just regurgitating what everyone else is saying. I think I would feel better about it if it were connected to some sort of really great, you know, site or source or bibliography service to bring that in, rather than just basing it on what other people are writing in their notes.
Yeah, and of course, we already see glimpses of this in other products. When you are in Google Docs, for example, and you want to create a link, the first thing you do is you just do the normal keystrokes or whatever it is that you do to drop the, you know, where to enter the URL, but they'll automatically suggest all these links. And in some cases, it's pretty obvious. You put in Facebook and then you do a link there, it'll show you Facebook.com. But in other cases, when it's about ideas or things in the news, you know, those articles that are brought up, you know, that's an influential way to get a lot of attention, is to be linked automatically, is one of the things that comes up when people look for common search terms. So we'll be watching that. We'll give it a test. And of course, we'll see how it goes. We hopefully will read all the reviews when this really comes out for real. Well, in just a sec, we're going to tell you about Americans' new relationship with spam. I'm not talking about the spiced ham product. I'm talking about the other bad kind. And but first, I want to tell you about Citrix GoToAssist. GoToAssist is the way to do tech support if you're in IT, or you run an IT department, or if your company does any kind of support, because it enables you to do support as if you're sitting at the user's desk, even if you're not. You can do attended or unattended support, and Citrix GoToAssist, of course, is the number one global market leader in remote support. And if you sign up for GoToAssist before October 10th, that's coming up next week, a week from today, you'll get another Citrix product of your choice for free for 6 months. GoToAssist remote support lets you provide live and unattended remote support to any computer or any mobile device. Very, very powerful stuff. You can screen share to diagnose and fix problems faster and more effectively. Sign up, go to GoToAssist today, and get another Citrix tool free for 6 months. Visit GoToAssist.com and get started. But don't wait. This special offer ends October 10th. Visit GoToAssist.com and sign up to receive this special offer today. Forrester researchers have discovered that Americans are warming to spam. They're actually starting to enjoy it. One reason, according to the report, is that people are obsessed with and addicted to their smartphones. They don't mind getting spam as much because it's an excuse to pull their phones out and use them. Another is that marketers are getting a little better at targeting spam to match user interests. And finally, spam filters are getting better too, so people are seeing less of it and therefore they are getting less annoyed by it. What do you think, Christina Warren? How do you feel about spam? Are you starting to love it?
No, not at all. I wonder if it's the people are responding to the survey this way just because spam filters are getting better and they're not seeing as much of it.
Yeah, I'm sure that's a huge factor as well. And you know, I think people use their phones a little bit like some people use cigarettes or something like that. If they're in social settings, it gives them something to do with their hands.
Yes.
And so if you get your phone rings, it's like, oh, well, you know, and you start playing with your phone, and that's sort of enjoyable intrinsically. And never mind that what came in is some kind of weight loss thing from Dr. Phil or whatever.
Right.
So you know, who knows? People are weird.
People are weird, but I don't know. I think it's a great headline, but I wonder about making the association. You know, I wonder if the causation equals effect. It doesn't quite make sense to me. There's something about this that seems maybe. I wonder if it says more about how spam filter. I really do wonder if it says more about spam filtering than the fact that we just like to play with our smartphones. Because let's be honest, there are enough notifications that aren't what I would classify as spam. I would classify them as annoying, but not as spam. That I get that give me an excuse to play with my phone, other than having to say click on the Viagra. Notification in my email, which thanks to Google and whatnot, I don't even see anymore. So,
yeah, Google Gmail spam filtering is still pretty good, although everything that of certain types get through for some reason. So, Dr. Oz, for example, anything that mentions Dr. Oz comes straight into my inbox. I have no idea why. I don't know how Dr. Oz does it. He's actually not involved. Those are fraudulent.
I'm sure he's not involved, but they know enough. They're like, oh, people love Dr. Oz. We can't filter Dr. Oz.
Yeah.
So. And then you probably filter the Wizard of Oz, and then everybody who loves Dorothy and the Scarecrow and the Tin Man would be freaked out too. So.
And we can't have that. We can't have that because we need Dorothy emails.
We do. I don't know about you. I get tons of Friends of Dorothy emails.
I do too. Me too. Wow. Small world. Well, our TNT fan of the day is Brian Lewis in St. Louis, Missouri, who says he watches Tech News Today on his Moto 360 Android Wear smartwatch. That's not true, is it, Jason?
I don't believe so. I'm not sure that you can, although, maybe there is some random app out there that streams it to your watch, but I haven't done this and I haven't seen it. I thought that you could just control from your watch and not necessarily play it. Looking at this screenshot, though, it does look like there's something going on there, but it's a play icon, so it's really hard to tell.
Yep. Yes, it is. Anyway, interesting photo.
Cool photo.
Maybe we should be able to. I don't know.
We should.
The battery life is already bad enough. You want it to be like minutes?
That's right. You would never get through the whole show. Well, how do you watch or listen to TNT? Just record a video or take a picture of your setup and post it on Google+, Twitter, or Facebook using the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT. Well, that is the tech news today. Christina Warren, thank you so much for joining us as our co-anchor.
Yay. Gunbeater.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again. Hope to have you on again soon. All right. Well, you can subscribe to Tech News Today on Stitcher, iTunes, YouTube, Feely, RSS, Yahoo. So many options. Choose your favorite at twit.tv/TNT. You can follow us on Twitter, Tech News Today TV, and please send us your thoughts and opinions. Send an email to tnt@twit.tv or leave voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. And don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight right here on the Twit Network. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you Monday.